everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the Food and Wine Variety Show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're still trapped at home and doing the show remotely, but don't fear, don't worry. The federal government is on the job, so sometime in 2025, we'll be back in the studio, I think. Before I get into who's on the show today, Nick, do you want to update everybody on the goings-on around town, such as they are?
Yes. So if you receive the list or you want it.com weekly, we send out a weekly e-blast updating you on everything that's happening in the D.C. metro area. Believe it or not, there are new restaurants that are opening. You can check that out in the openings page. But there are lots of restaurants reopening, which means they're either opening up their patios. Some of us are getting inside. But there's lots of new concepts. I think what's really amazing about the D.C. hospitality and restaurant scene is how everybody is finding ways to keep their employees safe and to keep you safe and still provide you with a fabulous, delicious experience. And obviously we'll be finding out more of that on the show, but please check out the list or you want it.com or follow me at NYCCINELLIS for the latest on everything happening in the DC metro area.
Well, I'm safe.
Take it away.
I'm in our son's hermetically sealed game room, so
yes.
No COVID
you're
in
the back,
here.
You're in the back cave.
Well,
you're
our son puts out cave. This, whatever, the COVID couldn't survive in here. we do have a great show. Believe it or not, the Rammies are still going to happen. And mm-hmm. Vanessa Kaminsky from St. Anselm's, she's the beverage manager there, is joining us. They're a Rammy nominee for Wine Program of the Year. And I especially want to hear about their Madeira back from the middle of the 19th century. That's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Restaurants are looking for all kinds of renovations to help keep their staff safe and the customers. Mikey Friedman of All Purpose Shaw has the first official temperature-checked restaurant in D.C. using technology for his employees before every shift. It's from Temperature Check, and he's going to be joined by Bruce Pike, who's the Temperature Check CEO. He'll tell us all about it. School closures, coupled with the obvious, the economic pressures of COVID, are causing a lot of children to experience food insecurity. In D.C. alone, 76% of kids are enrolled in free and reduced lunch programs. So we've got Adam Lustig from Trust for America's Health joining us with insights both into the problems and the solutions that are up and running. And the Cane Collective is a new consulting agency helping spirit companies develop spirit marketing opportunities.
We have Aaron Joseph, who is the creator of the Cane Collective, and it is a variety of mixers that are gorgeous and delicious. We actually used some last night, and he'll be on the show in a little bit. Okay, Deb Moser and Mitch Berliner are here as they are every week to talk about Central Farm Markets. Every week, the farmers market really goes out of their way to make sure you have a safe and healthy experience and can bring healthy and nutritious food into your home. Tell us, guys, what's happening at the markets this week.
You want to talk about protocols and talk about
Well, I just want to mention that we do have, as you said, it's safe. We have all the protocols in place. It is a mandate. Please wear your masks. Some people still think being outside, you don't need a mask. You do need a mask. We want to keep everybody safe. But mm-hmm. on the second part of this, you mentioned drinks, and that's mm-hmm. what we're all about today. All the summer fruits are in now, and Mitch has been making some incredible frozen martinis and daiquiris and just so the peaches and the, you tell them, Mitch, what you've been doing.
It's very simple. I do is take whatever fruit is available. I've done it with peaches, apricots, nectarines. We have the first watermelons today, so that's happening tonight. All I do is make a bunch of chunks of them, put them in the freezer for 15 minutes, 4 or 5 ice cubes. We make our own simple syrup. We've been using lavender lately. We've been making lavender simple syrup from lavender that we grow. And put in the booze, turn on the blender.
Well, which booze do you like? Are you a gin martini fan or a vodka martini fan?
Well, I'm a gin and he's a vodka.
Okay.
And I'm shaken, not stirred.
Sorry. Okay. And right. Is there a particular, do you use local brands? Since I know you have some.
We do.
At the market, right?
Yes. One of my favorites is Miscellaneous Distillery.
They're
and
great.
I am in love with their gin and their whiskeys. They're rocking. I mean, they are.
And which market? Awesome. Which market are they at?
They come. They will be at Pike next weekend. So they'll be at Pike next weekend. They rotate through the both markets, but they will be there next weekend. And if you're smart, you'll call them up and say, "Bring me a case." So okay.
You know, you need it.
Don't want to run out when you're stuck at home.
Right. Okay. So very quickly, just as we're wrapping up, it's really hot out there. So the hours have changed at the markets.
Right.
What's the story?
Yeah, we're closing early today. So Pike will close at 1 p.m. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow, the two Sunday markets, Nova in Vienna, our Northern Virginia market, will close at 12:30. And mm-hmm. the Bethesda market will close at 1 p.m. So okay. Get your shopping done early.
Okay, great. Thanks, there. Guys. Yes, tell us where they can find you guys.
Okay.
Centralfarmmarkets.com, and everything's there.
All right, Vanessa, thank you so much for joining us this morning as a Rammy nominee for your wine program. Tell us about...
I want to hear about Vanessa. How did you get to be a winey?
By accident, more than anything, I guess.
Now, I can see you on screen. You look like you're about 18. So how did all that happen? Why are you allowed to drink wine?
Well, I'll be, because there's no shame at this point, I'll be 33 this year.
What?
I'm originally from Pittsburgh. I had a really awesome experience working in restaurants for the past almost 15 years, off and on. And I had two really awesome managers who kind of challenged me to, you know, learn more about what I was doing as a server. And I really fell in love with wine. And when you are a lifetime student, wine is something you'll never know everything about. And it's definitely a lesson in humility. Every time you think you know everything, you realize you're like, oh, actually, no, I know very little.
Well, so you're at Stephen Starr's St. Anselm's over mm-hmm. in the Union Market District. You guys reopened a couple weeks ago, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how did you guys deal with COVID? What are you guys offering? Like, how do you work with your wine program sort of during this pandemic?
So I think from a beverage standpoint, especially, we have a 58-page wine list. And yes,
no, it's massive.
There are pictures. There's a lot of like supporting text, but it's still a very big list. There's about 600, 700 different bottle selections available most of the given time.
I found the centerfold intriguing myself.
Is it?
Well, so just to, was Eric Siegelbaum a part of putting that list together?
Yes. So Eric was the original, he was the wine director for the company for Stephen Starr. He was like the beverage coordinator for everybody. Mm-hmm. Because they had not, I came in to St. Anselm right as we opened. So I came in September of September of 2018. Oh my gosh. We're celebrating 2 years this year.
Amazing.
So I came in kind of as we were opening, which means that while I didn't get a chance to build the original list, mm-hmm. Eric pretty much handed me the reins in September, right at the end of September, and said, "Have fun. I'm out." And I was like, "All right, bye."
I'll take over.
Yeah, so it's been a lot of fun. There's a lot of choices. Like, I've worked with a really small list, up to 200. When you have this much room, and our list is very well varied, it means that I can make decisions based on like a week or 2 weeks. Like, we could buy a Albarino tomorrow and get it for Tuesday. 6 bottles, sell all of them in 2 weeks, and then decide, okay, I really wasn't in love with that Albarino. I'm going to just mm-hmm. pick a different one, or maybe pick a different varietal that's similar and just put that on. We all right. use the list almost two or three times a week.
You have to cut to talk about this Madeira you have dating back to 1862. What do you have to pay to get a sip of that?
That one's a little bit over $100.
Is it open?
It's open. So we still
it's fortified, right? So it lasts forever.
It actually is one of the most intriguing spirits because it's a fortified wine. So it's about 18% alcohol on average, really regardless. It's not going to spoil. So if you think about it, and kind of the easiest way to put it, Madeira starts off as wine, they add alcohol, they stop the fermentation at a certain level of sugar, depending on the style. And then they're going to age it in big barrels called pipes. In the old days, those pipes went on a boat. That boat went across the ocean, and the vino de rota, or the wine of the road, that heated it up, cooled it down, heated it up, cooled it down, and then it created a basically pasteurized product. Like, it's matterized. It's it's stabilized by alcohol, sugar, and that heating process. So it's not going to turn into vinegar. It's not going to go bad if you leave it open. In fact, most people, when you're drinking Madeira, we recommend, if it's older than, if it's a Gadafiera or like a vintage Madeira, we recommend decanting it, or at least opening it a day or two ahead of time to let it start to heat. It makes a huge difference. Like, it's much more impressive. It's like decanting wine.
So did you have a love of Madeira? Was this a wine that you were really into, or has it evolved for you?
I think it's evolved. I was always really, I love dessert wine. I love wines that are, I love sherry, and like, it's just been such a really great experience to get to work with so much stuff, like everything. Like, if I wanted to buy something really random tomorrow, I would just talk to our general manager and say, hey, I found this really kind of intriguing, like off the wall thing. I'd love to learn a little bit more about it. Would you be cool if I brought a few bottles? And that's kind of how we've developed things like the sherry program and different ports and like aperitifs. And Madeira for me just became something that I was like, oh, this is so cool. And now I'm fully down the rabbit hole, and it is a terrifying experience most days because you...
Well, so we have like a minute left.
Yeah, sorry.
If you don't mind just telling me, like, so when people, where can people eat now at St. Anselm's? How do you interact with them during this time? Because you got to go, and how does it all work for you?
So we're fully operational right now. We have both the indoor dining, which is limited at 50% capacity. Before we opened the dining room, we had plexiglass installed per spec in between all of the booths that did not have a 5-foot barrier in between them, or we have made sure that people are spaced at 6 or more feet inside. Limited traffic areas, bathrooms are generally like only one person at a time because they are not huge, and we have hand sanitizer kind of all around. We do require guests to be wearing a mask at all times when they're not sitting at the table actively consuming or drinking.
Does anybody ever get confused and drink the hand sanitizer, or no?
Haven't had that problem yet, but it is it is still early.
That's what you should sell for $100 a pop.
Ooh. Okay. Let's just ignore him.
But I mean, all of our staff was masked.
All right, Vanessa, let's tell everybody where they can find you, where they can find St. Anselm's online, and your address, please.
So we are located in Union Market, which is in Northeast DC, 1250 Fifth Street, right on the corner of Fifth and Morse, down the street from Union Market. Our website is stanselmdc.com. If you want to find us on Instagram at St. Anselm, I believe it's _DC. But if not, we have some fun stuff. We do all of our programming on social media for the most part, and on our website. We have some fun events coming up, so check us out on there.
Excellent. Thanks, Vanessa. This is David and Nikki Nellis, Foodie and the Beast, with a Rammy nominee for Wine Program of the Year. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a sec.
We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're going to change subjects here a little. Our son Sam is in the restaurant industry. He's the beverage director for Red Hand, All Purpose Shaw, and All Purpose down at the waterfront. And he's at work almost every day because they work him like a dog. And we worry about his safety because he's interacting with customers and you know, fellow workers. And All Purpose Shaw, in fact, has come up with a great way of sort of testing everybody's health. So we've got Mikey Freeman, who is one of the founders of those three restaurants and one of the owners, and a gentleman named Bruce Pike of Temperature Check. And All Purpose Shaw is the first official Temperature Check restaurant in DC. They use this technology for employees before every shift. So Mikey, let's start with you. What is it like, has it been like during the COVID crisis? Now I see that you're on the beach right now, so you're not suffering, but in general for the restaurant industry during COVID.
Well, thank you for having me on the show, and what a great intro.
Hope you get sunburned.
I wear SPF 100, so I, you know, trying to stay safe at every point in my life.
Right.
But thank you so much for having me on the show. Great to see you guys. You know, COVID has been obviously a life-changing experience for everybody, but within the hospitality industry, obviously a huge moment. You know, and a lot of people are very nervous. I think it's for us, we see it as a as a challenge, obviously, like anything in business. So we immediately, you know, kind of pivoted, which is a big buzzword right now when you're talking about the hospitality industry and COVID. We never closed, none of the restaurants closed, which was great. Our goal was to keep our employees paid and to sell goods to stimulate the economy in whatever way that we could. So that was our initial goal. If we were going to go down, we were going to go down with a fight and go down swinging. But, you know, the DC community is what it is and is amazingly supportive. But we're also an employee first restaurant and company. So we had to figure out how to make it safe and comfortable for people to come in. And, you know, obviously, as the news came out about safety guidelines and masks and temperatures and all the questions that you need to ask, we complied with everything. We were kind of ahead of the curve on most of those things, you know, especially when it came to safety guidelines, because we wanted to make sure that if anything, we were protecting our employees to make them feel like they were coming into a safe, comfortable work environment. And, you know, in the beginning, we were following all the same codes that we had to follow as a restaurant. You know, everybody now knows that you got to wash your hands for, you know, 20 seconds at 110 degrees at least. And we've been practicing that since we've been in the industry. So those were nothing, those were no new guidelines for us. We were already practicing that. Masks came into play. We were one of the first, I think, restaurants to really kind of widespread have masks in all the restaurants for all employees. And then, you know, when we knew that temperatures were a big thing, we started testing people. We got these cheap kind of garbage thermometers online, and you know, we didn't really trust them, and you know, that's where Bruce comes in. He kind of called me and had this idea, and obviously he can kind of tell you, but I think he was a little bit hesitant to talk to me about it, but I was very much on board with the idea that you could combine tech with safety, and you know, Bruce kind of being in the same mindset as myself and my business partners in terms of, hey, like, this is only a moment, but this is a moment to pivot and figure things out. Mm-hmm. We were able to kind of come together and well, I was able to procure Bruce's equipment. Basically, we didn't come together. He gave me stuff.
Wait a minute.
And it worked out really well.
You procured Bruce. That's very interesting.
Before we go to Bruce.
Many years ago.
Before we go to Bruce, just a quick question. Mikey, were these things that you, that was your team asking for him? Like, were people coming to you and saying, your employees, like, I'm nervous. Do you know what I mean? Like, was it coming from your employees?
So we have, you know, as a company, we had resources right out of the gate. Mm-hmm. We were emailing every day, every other day. We were giving people updates. We were asking our managers what makes this store, whether it was Red Hen, All Purpose in Shaw, or All Purpose Capital Riverfront, what makes this store safer? What makes you feel more comfortable? And as obviously new guidelines came out, as more science came out, which is what we're listening to, which is science, we knew that temperature checking was really, really important to mm-hmm. at least give that first barrier of safety and comfort, right? Like if you walk in the store and you get 10th and you're 97.8, you can walk through and be like, great. If you get 10th and you're 100.4, we're going to sit you down and say, look, maybe it was really hot outside. We're going to let you sit for 5 minutes and temp you again. If mm-hmm. you get temped again, we have protocols as to what the next steps are. It's just like we treat it as what's called a HACCP plan within the restaurant. Which is a hazard mm-hmm. analysis critical control point. So we treat it like that to make sure that at every point we know what steps to take if there's an issue.
All right, well, Bruce.
Were people asking? I think it was more of an active decision on our part.
So Bruce, what did you bring to the table? What was the technology and how does temperature check work?
Sure. So temperature check is based on infrared technology. And this technology has been around forever. It is nothing new. It's actually been around since World War II. Unfortunately, everything has pretty much been invented for combat and war and military purposes. And then they've always been, you know, transitioned into civilian life after there. And so, and, you know, these devices are very similar to the devices that you buy for your home, you know, where you're taking mm-hmm. your temperature, and they are pretty much what they're doing is they're scanning the skin. They're checking for elevated skin temperature is what they're looking for. Okay. And so these are not, you know, we're not diagnosing for COVID. We're not mm-hmm. diagnosing for the flu. We're not doing this. There's nothing out there other than a test that can do that. What this is a prevention tool in a prevention tool bag that can help keep people safe from spreading germs.
Okay, so how is it utilized?
Sure. So there's two different products that we have. We have a TC Prevent, and then we also have a TC Risk Scan. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so the TC Prevent, which Mike is using at All Purpose Shaw, it is a face scanner, and it's on a floor stand. And so people walk up to it, and it has AI technology, so it actually recognizes the person if you enter them into the system. And
cool.
Yeah. So it
yeah,
just
it is. It. It is.
Yeah. Cool. And so it can do that, or if you don't want that, you don't have to use that, right? It's definitely an option. But what it does is it takes your temperature from your forehead region, and it lets you know if you have a normal skin temperature or if you have an abnormal skin temperature, and it'll give you a mm-hmm. warning. You know, the threshold we have it at is 100.4, and that's it. I mean, it's mainly, you know, ensuring that is, you know, that's a lot being used in offices. It's being used in back of house. But the main question that I had for myself when I came up with the idea was, what's going to be the whole reason I came up with this idea is because I actually own another company that's in the event industry. And, mm-hmm. and you know, I own Pike Productions, and we are an event production AV company, and we lost 80 events in 3 days in March.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my life was, the rug was pulled out from underneath of me. And mm-hmm. after I picked myself back up, I literally said, what can I do to help not only the event industry give confidence to people to gather again, to bring back my industry since I've been in since I was 15 years old, but what can I do to give people confidence? Like, you know, Mike popped into my head, you know, Michelin popped in my head, David Gloss sure. popped in my head, you know, all my friends who are chefs and they own these restaurants, Gina, all of these people, they're suffering. And what can I do to help them? Because that's just, when you're in the hospitality industry, you're a people person, and you're there to help, right? And that's just what we are by nature. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. And I just came up with it. So the reason I say all this is because when a customer walks in, or you're a front of house application, you know, they have it where they might not want to get their face scanned, right? They want to, a restaurant is trying to recreate the coziness of walking in from the past, right? And so that's mm-hmm. the big hot topic right now. So instead of getting your temperature taken by your face or your forehead, we actually developed a wrist scanner. And so this is a wrist scanner where it's on a floor stand, and mm-hmm. it's meant to be at the front of house. It could also be at the back of house as well.
So people can just walk in
yep.
and scan their wrist.
And scan
because
their
I
wrist.
I think for the patron needs to be a participant in the safety of the front of the house and the back of the house.
Yep.
And if we're going to start having in dining, we have in dining,
yep.
then temperature check has to be for real for everybody.
Well, yeah. Let me ask a question. Mikey, are you there?
Yeah, he's there.
Are you surfing? My question is, what do you do if somebody refuses to have their temperature checked? If they refuse to wear a mask, they got to go. But
well, I mean, you know, that all, it depends on what the preceding protocol is, right? Like, are you talking about a guest, or are you talking about a staff?
Talking about a guest.
No guest.
Well, I mean, they're not obligated to take the temperature. We can, and we don't have these protocols in place because we're not allowing people inside the restaurant mm-hmm. right now. Even though we're in phase 2 in DC, we don't feel comfortable having people gather inside the restaurant. But it would just depend on what the rules are. If you don't want to get your temperature checked, and I don't know what the next step would be. We haven't come up with that. I think we're waiting for CDC guidelines to how that gets approached. But I would say at this instant, if someone doesn't want to get their temperature checked, then that's just fine. We would have to make probably a case-by-case decision after that.
I got you.
That's Bruce, as vague as I can put it for you.
Well, but also, since you're not doing in dining yet, like, you don't have to worry. Right now, what's most important is the health of your staff and that they're safe.
Right. And what I can tell you with full confidence is also, like, the staff loves it. You know, mm-hmm. it gives them an opportunity to make sure they're okay. If they're sure. like, oh, I'm congested. I hope we all go through these moments, right? You wake up and it's also almost like, do I have COVID?
Do I have it?
Every morning, every morning I wake up and I'm like, is my throat sore?
So, all right, yeah, so of course.
Two things. Number one, Mikey, your paramount. Oh, he's got his daughter.
All right, Bruce.
Wait.
Wrap up.
Wait, I know we do. Mikey, your paramount concern is keeping baby Sam safe. And Bruce, yeah. How do people contact you if they want more information?
Absolutely. So the website is really, it has a lot of great information on it. And it's literally www.temperaturecheck.com. And I don't know who was looking down on me, but that URL was available and I grabbed
it
up.
Hard to believe.
You know, and it's so you can find out a lot of information on there. You can email us at info@temperaturecheck.com. We have a phone number as well on the website. Fill out a contact us form. And, okay. You know, yeah, that's how you can get information. But, you know, again, this is something that I truly believe will be helpful. And, you know, a big question that people ask me are, you know, is this something that's going to be prevalent after COVID? Is this something after, you know, after a vaccine is made?
Yeah, there is no after COVID. There. It's here forever. So.
Well, I agree. I actually agree
with
that.
Okay, I'm so sorry.
Bruce, sorry, we got to wrap.
We have to wrap it up. We'll bring you back in because I'd love to continue this conversation more. I want to thank both Bruce Pike and Mikey Friedman for joining us this morning. This is David and Nikki Nellis. We're going to talk about feeding kids next. We'll be back in just a sec.
Okay, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. I think everyone knows that millions of children around the country get most of their nutritious meals at school. They're about, I don't know. I mean, in the D.C. area alone, almost 77% of kids are enrolled in free and reduced lunch programs. And there are a lot of people trying to address this. We have with us Adam Lustig, who is the manager of promoting health and cost control in the state for Trust for America's Health. They're a nonprofit that promotes optimal health for everybody in the community. And Adam, welcome. Glad to have you on the show. This is a huge problem, especially with Trump threatening to cut off funding to school districts and to states that don't open schools in the middle of this pandemic.
But so, we do want to say that Trust for America's Health is a nonpartisan group. It's very important. And you guys are really doing some amazing things. So can you tell us first about what Trust for America's Health is?
Sure. So first of all, thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate being able to talk with you and to your listeners. So the Trust for America's Health, Nikki, as you said, is an independent, nonpartisan public health research and advocacy organization that's really dedicated to promoting optimal health and well-being for every individual and community in the country. And we specifically are looking at all of our work through a health equity lens, so really focusing on issues that may impact vulnerable or low-income communities, and how we can identify and lift up and advocate for policies that improve the health and well-being for all individuals, but specifically those communities.
So pre-COVID, how did you enact that? And then how did you pivot, word of the century already, like how did you change to address the pandemic?
The Trust for America's Health has been around for over a decade now, and we produce a number of yearly reports on a wide range of public health issues. We produce a yearly report called The State of Obesity, which will actually be released in September of this year, where we rank all 50 states and the District of Columbia in terms of a number of metrics on obesity-related issues. We also focus on public health preparedness, which is a very important topic today. So we've been publishing a report called Ready or Not for about 7 to 8 years now. And this really talks exactly about what we're experiencing as a country.
Well, I think the answer to the question is not, but go ahead.
Unfortunately, that's the case, but we've been advocating for increased and robust public health funding for many, many years because the public health infrastructure is dated, and that's because we haven't properly invested in public health in our country.
Okay, so for people who don't know, what is public health? I think it's a vague term. So for the layperson, what is it, and why should we invest in public health?
It's public health is often invisible, and that's why people don't recognize what it is. As we think about, do we have clean air to breathe? Do we have clean water to drink? Do we have access to nutritious foods? These are all core public health issues. Things like immunizations as well. I'd rather not get into that topic on this call today, but these are all public health issues.
Just so you know, we're on the same page.
Yes,
so.
I know we're on the same page.
Okay.
But these are the public health issues where we're trying to promote optimal health and well-being for everyone. And sometimes it's these invisible factors that people may not think about day to day, but they play a critically important role in people's health.
Well, but let me ask you a question because I was just before the show, I was sort of flipping through Twitter and everything else. And it's amazing how many of the haves don't give a good goddamn about the have-nots. You know, they're like, I got mine and I'm healthy and my water's okay. It's coming out of the tap just fine and it's clean. So why is it my problem to worry about them? Let them get their own. How do you deal with that? Because you must confront that as well, even from legislators.
It can be difficult sometimes, but we're really dedicated to being a nonpartisan organization. And so sometimes it's about how do you communicate these issues in a way that resonates with people who may have different beliefs or political backgrounds. And so sometimes it could be utilizing language such as enable people to be able to express their full liberty or independence and things like that. And I know that may sound silly, but communication is very important. And for a lot of the issues that we focused on, and I think especially now as we're in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic, there has been a lot of bipartisan interest in these issues. And so it's our hope that the COVID-19 pandemic, as sad the situation has been and how impactful as it has been, that this will be a wake-up call for all Americans, regardless of their political affiliation, that we do really need to further invest in public
health. Well, but isn't it also true that if these children grow up malnourished, it means their brains may not fully develop, their health will be affected. And so the haves will be affected down the road by an additional healthcare burden on them and their taxes, because these people have been allowed to grow up unhealthy, have been allowed to grow up more poorly educated, to have learned less and be more of a drain on the system. I mean, I don't think people get that there's a lag, there's a lag effect to this that affects, the 1% as much as it affects everybody else.
And I think this is something that is an issue with public health. As I said, a lot of the public health interventions are invisible and they don't have that immediate type of impact. When you talk about clean water or ensuring nutritious meals in schools for children, research has shown that highly nutritious meals improves cognitive ability of children. But that's not something that you really see until later on in life.
Right.
And then if you bring in the economic perspective on that as well, that's a very long-term investment. And unfortunately, often policymakers think in very short timelines in terms of what is going to be that immediate impact. And so that's something that we try to do as an organization, is really try and lift up the evidence and research that's out there and try and promote these policies that we do know health and well-being.
Well, given that we're such a data-driven society, everybody wants the data. So nobody wants to wait 15 years for data. They want it today. Since you had some plans in place, how are you enacting them now that we're in the middle of this pandemic? I mean, there are so many kids. We've had Debbie Shore on from Kid Hungry and Share Our Strength. We do a lot of work with her. How are you guys ensuring that those who need the food can get it?
Trust for America's Health, we're not just a research organization, but an advocacy organization. So we spend a lot of time speaking to legislators on Capitol Hill, in addition to other agency leads, whether that's the CDC, who we support and work closely with, or some of the other agencies that are out there. I think at least specific to school nutrition, that's focused at USDA. They're the ones that manage these school meal programs. And so we just continue to try and show the evidence. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but we continue to fight the good fight, as I would say.
But what are some ways, with schools closed and now with this battle of reopening, how summertime is already a bad time for kids who don't have access to nutritious food or meals in general. Mm-hmm. So how are you guys, the Trust for America's Health, how are you working with the school? Do you work with the school systems or is it all through the USDA? Where is the insurance that we can get that food to the kids who need it? And now their families. I mean, there's so many families out of work.
We don't work directly with school systems, but we work with a lot of partner organizations. The Trust for America's Health is a pretty small organization. And so we really rely on sometimes the great research that other organizations have produced, in addition to entering into advocacy collaborations. And I think specifically on this school nutrition issue, there's a lot of leading organizations that focus on childhood hunger or food insecurity in general that we partner with, whether that's developing letters to write to USDA FDA or make legislative representatives aware of these issues and why they're critically important. And so that's really our focus in trying to take the data, take what we're hearing and seeing at the local level and bringing that up to those that are making these very important decisions.
And is there anything that the layperson can do? I mean, what can we do to make sure that this message is heard?
I think as it specifically relates to school meal programs, I think one thing that we do encourage folks to do is if this is something they're passionate about, reach out to your local legislator. I know that can be a little difficult in the district. That's a whole other set of issues. Thinking about how can we advocate for these issues that are critically important? Legislators are supposed to be representing their local constituents. And so that can sometimes be a very powerful message. Additionally, I'd encourage people to reach out to local nonprofits or food banks that are working on food insecurity issues. Sometimes they may need actual food donations, they may need financial support, they may need volunteers, or maybe just as simple as getting the word out. And that's something that's very important to local power building and being able to advocate on behalf of your community.
And with the research that you all do, is there anything that's within that research that are sort of like ahas that maybe people aren't aware of?
So I think at least for the report that we've released this week specific to school meal programs, the one thing that we did want to highlight was related to this pandemic EBT program that was created in the most recent coronavirus funding package. And so this is a supplemental benefit that's provided to families whose children qualify for free or reduced price lunches, and it provides $5.70 per child per school day in additional EBT benefits for these families. However, that program was targeted just to the past school year, and it is not currently applicable to this upcoming school year. And so that's something that we're advocating for in partnership with a lot of leading food insecurity advocates to ensure that this program can be in place this upcoming fall, because all of the numbers that we've produced in our reports, as David had said, about 77% of children in DC qualify for free or reduced price lunches. So for that 77% of families, they can have access to this additional benefit. And we anticipate that number will probably be even higher because of the economic toll that COVID-19 has taken on communities across the country.
Adam, we've got about a minute left, but the question is, if they go to virtual learning, distance learning, how do those 70% of kids or 77% of kids get their meals?
David, that's a great question and exactly what we get at in our report. And so we highlight the innovations that schools have done for this past school year and then what they can do for this upcoming school year. So if schools are still in distance learning in the District of Columbia and states across the country, they've been able to develop meal pickup sites. So children who do regularly access these meals can still go to schools or other facilities to access their meals. And then this pandemic EBT program that I highlighted, that's a really critical benefit because for some families, they may not be able to get to that meal pickup site. And so that benefit can often be a lifeline for them.
Excellent. Well, Thank you so much for joining us today, Adam. Just can you tell people if they're interested in finding out more about Trust for America's Health where to go?
Absolutely. So our website is tfah.org. And on our website, we have a page solely dedicated to COVID-19 resources that address not only this very important issue related to school meal programs, but many of the issues that I discussed earlier related to public health funding and advocacy as a whole in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Well, you're doing God's work.
You are. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. This is David and Nikki Nellis, Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a minute.
All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We got an old buddy on the show. 3 years ago, CJ Alexander, Aaron Joseph, and Ezra Allen started the Cane Collective because they thought there was something missing in the spirits industry. And Aaron Joseph is here to tell us what was missing and the hole that they plugged. How are you, man?
I'm very good. Nice. Thank you very much for having me on. It's great to be on.
All right, it's good to have you.
Okay, but before we start, I just want to say that we got our hands on some of the Cane Collective products, thanks to Aaron, and we tested some of them last night.
And they're good.
And they're really delicious.
They're non-alcoholic mixers, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
So tell us what was missing out there in the universe, and you were like, we're going to fill that hole.
So actually, this is a baby that we came out with the second week of the pandemic.
Brilliant.
Ezra and myself, we do private events. We're also at work at large bartenders. And so within a 5-day span, our calendar got wiped clean for 5 months. And so we decided to take the opportunity. We had discussed this possibility over 2 years. And of course, the natural excuse is we didn't have time, but corona pandemics tend to make time for things.
Sure. So
we decided to explore this. It's been a passion project of ours for a while, but we wanted to elevate the home cocktail experience without the complications of making craft cocktails. So you don't need to be a chemist, a chef, or a biologist to create a great drink. And so what we did was took the passion and provided it with fresh ingredients, with a handcrafted experience, and put everything in a bottle, and we came up with cane mixers.
Well, but so here's what I think is interesting. You know, in the sort of craft cocktail time period, right? Everybody's all about these craft cocktails. How did you come up with what's in these mixers? Because they're not super sweet, they're not super juicy, they're really clean flavors. So did you guys balance them?
So we took our approach, the natural way we take our approach to making cocktails. We wanted to elevate it, provide complexity, different layers. If you can tell, I am a huge food fan, so I love food. I didn't get my size by avoiding meals.
We can only see you from the neck up. So
you look super skinny here. So
I thought it was Superman for a minute.
This the Corona beard is doing wonders right now. but yeah, we wanted to have a complex mixer in a bottle that hit on different layers. I mean, mm-hmm. for us, it's about creating an equal platform, or just a malleable platform, and letting consumers or guests take their experience one way or the other. And that was the main objective of putting our mixers out there. We wanted something that was completely well balanced out of the bottle, and consumers can take it to a different level if they want to. But at least we provided an even platform for you to elevate your drinking experience.
So tell us a little bit about the different, how many styles are there?
So we currently are offering 5, and today we just released our newest seasonal out there. But we started off with our core 3, our Tropical Orchard, which is a tropical green tea created here in Baltimore from White mm-hmm. Tea Company, lime juice, and fresh pressed Granny Smith apple syrup. Our South mm-hmm. Side is a staple of a cocktail mixer in Baltimore. So we felt we had to do something that, kind of adhere to the drinking culture here. And so it's fresh lemon, mint, a little bit of simple syrup. And then our twist was we threw some fresh ginger in there. Mm-hmm. And then one of my favorite expressions, just because it kind of reminds me of my time spent in Hawaii, is the guava tiki punch, which is guava, grapefruit, lime, and a spiced pineapple syrup.
You have 2 more. Go ahead.
No, and then from there, we took our opportunity for a seasonal in May, where Cinco de Mayo was coming along, and I was fortunate to represent Baltimore in the Patron Margarita of the Year competition in 2018. Mm-hmm. And so we provided our passion fruit jalapeno mix to kind of emulate that margarita. And it was so popular that when we tried to take it away, people literally called me and they were upset. And so we kept that around. And then our June seasonal was popular again. We did that in conjunction with a couple of bloggers here in Baltimore. And it's fresh strawberries, blackberries, blueberries from a farm, lemon juice, and mint. And we threw some edible glitter in there and called it Bon Vivant's Mixed Berry Punch. Huh. And that stayed around. So those are the 5 that we have started. And then today was the launch of our newest one.
Which is what?
Fresh watermelon, basil, farm fresh peony flower water, and lime juice.
That sounds delicious. So now for the uninitiated who doesn't really use mixers, like for example, I used the cane Southside last night. How do you recommend people using them? Like what would you recommend?
I think what we hit and we found out as time has progressed that people have gotten really creative with our mixers. I personally have been a sober bartender for almost 10 years. December 5th will be 10 years. And so it was really important for me to have a stable product that people can mix on a non-alcoholic standpoint. So adding club soda or ginger ale or ginger beer to any of our expressions still makes it a fun non-alcoholic mixer. But also when you include it with champagne, it's a great mimosa. You mix it with hard liquor and it's a great cocktail mixer. They have been made into milkshakes, popsicles, even pies. We kind of, again, let everybody kind of make your own adventure with our mixers.
Well, it's funny that you said that. Oh. Well, wait, because I love the, I've been drinking the Tropical Green Orchard just from the bottle during the show. And I was thinking what a great popsicle it would make. I mean,
Yes, and it's funny because if you look at that build, it's pretty much a toddy build. So you have tea, you have citrus, and you have a sweetener. So if we keep that around for the cooler months, you can heat that same mix up, and now you have a hot toddy.
Oh, nice. Fascinating. So now, do you have on your website, which is beautiful, by the way, do you make these recommendations to people? Like, how are you assisting people?
So we actually like the actual involvement with our consumers. So we encourage people to direct message us on Instagram, and we kind of suggest recipes. Our standard recipe for any of our mixers is 2-part mixer, 1-part spirit. And then from there, we allow people to kind of customize them to their personal palate. We are definitely working on recipe development as we speak, and that will be coming out via our website and also including videos on Instagram, and it's just a work in progress right now, but we're definitely looking to get some recipe recommendations. But we also like the recipes of our consumers that they come up with, and so we encourage them to tag us in anything they make, and so we can get a perspective of how they're using our mixers as well.
And so can people in DC buy these? Like, where are these sold? How do you get them?
Unfortunately, right now, they are just located in the Baltimore market. There are some serious talks going on about a DC merger or market immersion. So I will keep you guys posted on that. But as of right now, it's just Baltimore and Annapolis.
And how do people, and where in Baltimore? Like, are you at a farmer's market? Like, how do people buy them?
Thank you. Well, you can always consult our website. Our website is being evolved to allow people to see our locations. We do the farmers market in Fells Point every Saturday, and then we do the JFX in Catonsville farmers market on Sunday. And then we have a number of selected retailers and liquor stores in Baltimore that are offered. Our newest acquisition is the Wine Cellars in Annapolis that has picked up all 5 SKUs. So now we are now in Anne Arundel County. And we're looking to expand over to the Eastern Shore here shortly, specifically Dorchester County.
So let me ask you one last question before we wrap up with you. So now that it's open, how stable is it? How long does it last?
So the great thing is it's a fresh ingredient product. So naturally, you would have to keep it refrigerated. We hope that you consume it before the Best Buy date. But in case you don't, you have about a 2 to 3 week lifespan as long as you keep it refrigerated. What we suggest to consumers is if you find yourself with more mix than you anticipate by the Best Buy date, you can easily place it in a plastic container and freeze it. You can use it as ice cubes as well.
And what a good idea.
That's a great idea. Yeah.
And then you can use it as, and then as you freeze it, it stops the deterioration, and then you can unthaw it as you are ready to use it.
Well, I mean, you drop a couple of cubes in a glass of vodka and you've got your drink.
I'm going to tell you now that Tropical Orchard as a big rock to pour over whiskey is not a bad idea.
Okay. I like that. And I want that watermelon one. Yeah. Okay. Aaron, thank you so much. First of all, thank you for making sure that we had access to try the product. That was really generous of you. And tell everybody, please, where they can find you online and where they can find you on Instagram, because that's so important.
No problem. So online, our website is www.canecollective.com. On there, you will find a little bit of blurb about actually who we are and what we do, as well as all the mixers we actually have in market. For Instagram purposes, you can find us at cane_collective. And my personal Instagram is at AJZ Joseph. And please reach out. I am more than happy to interact with anybody that has any questions or I can help with cocktail ideas.
All right. And I got one more question because we have Aaron on the screen here as we're doing this. He has the same habit as our son, Eli, of twirling his
He likes to twirl his hair. Finger.
While he thinks, and that's a sign of a sweet person. So there.
Please do not tell my mother that.
Your mother loves you.
Aaron, congrats on the new business. We're so eager to see how successful it is. Thanks for joining us today. And we want to thank you, our listeners, for joining us today on Foodie and the Beast. So many incredible and important things are happening around the DC area. We were lucky to be able to end it on a delicious note with the King Collective Elixirs, which you should definitely try to find. But don't forget, there are farmers markets happening around the DC area. Check out Central Farm Market with Temperature Check. If you're in the industry and you want to find out more about what Bruce Pike and Mikey Freeman are doing, please go to the list or youwantit.com. I have all the information there. And everything that we heard about school closures and how to make sure that kids get good health, we also have that information on the site as well. So thank you so much for joining us today on Foodie and the Beast. Find everything on the list or youwantit.com or follow me at NYCCINELLIS. Wear a mask, use hand sanitizer.
And if you want to know what I think politically, email Nikki and I'll send you a note.
Be safe. Have a delicious week.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.